there was like a Twin Peaks clue that somebody was going to manufacture. Let me guess, the murder gets solved before the game is over, and then the players just lose interest and quit one by one.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod host, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up. All right, welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with...
Tim Coker.
All right, yes, we're here talking about, well, comic books as usual, and more importantly, we're talking about the movie that's you gotta see. It's the movie event of the year, Comics Beyond the Comic Book Pages, and it is created, directed, produced, I don't know what all you call it, but by... Michael Valentine, and Michael is out around the world touring trying to promote this movie. By the way, you can get it on Amazon. You got to check this out. It's a really nice history of comic books, comic book conventions, everything there is to do with comic books. But Michael Valentine joining us. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm great tonight, you guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
After watching this, I'm like, I got to talk to this guy after seeing this movie. First of all, in the movie, you talk to people such as, oh, let's just say Stan Lee, Frank Miller, Neil Adams, Mark Silvestri, Mark Waid. I mean, just people that are on my bucket list. Those are the people that, before I die, I have to meet. And yet, you've got them all, and you've met them all, and talked with them all about the history of comics. Oh, and Todd McFarlane, another one. You've talked to these people and put them in this movie. You've completed my bucket list by sitting down and watching one movie. Michael, what got you started into comic books first? We'll start that before we talk about the movie itself.
Well... First of all, thank you for that. I was kind of in the same boat. I was so many greats in the comic book industry that I wanted to interview, and I went right after some of my heroes, and it's just a thrill to have them. Hey, it's a thrill to have them all in one film, you know, like it brings them together whether they wanted to or not in a film. But it's just whenever I watch it, I get goosebumps just remembering, you know, meeting those people. For me, I got into comics when I was probably about 7 or 8 years old. I used to love reading, you know, Spider-Man in the funny pages of the newspaper.
Right.
And then when I was going to school at 8 years old, the comic books were still in the 7-Elevens on the spinning racks.
Oh, yeah. Love those.
Yep. Yeah, it was great. So I would, you know, I'd go to school and I'd walk home. And on my way home from school, I'd stop at the 7-Eleven. I'd get one of those super-sized Slurpees. And... I would get brain freeze, and I would read comic books, and I would read them right there at 7-Eleven, you know? I mean, I had a little bit of money, but I didn't really have much money, so I would just read them at the newsstand, and I really was gravitated towards Spider-Man, especially, right, like John Romita's Spider-Man. He's one of my favorite artists, and Batman and Neil Adams especially. And then, you know, just kept reading them throughout my life, and, you know, I've always... been a huge fan of them. I've been a huge fan of the stories of the artists, the talent, the creators, the, you know, the storylines. It's always been intriguing to me. And I think that's why I decided that I wanted to actually do a film about it. It's been almost 14 years since I started it.
I'm just guessing here.
That's a long time.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I'm just guessing here, but judging by, and we're not going to get reveal this information because, hey, nobody likes to talk about their age, but just guessing by the connection we had to make, the handle, your connection that when I had to contact you, it looks like we share the same birth year. So we're all three here the same age. And I would say that we, you know, growing up, one of the things I got to ask you if you did this, you know, with the spinning racks, you go through and you always, I did the same. I'd read them there and whenever, until they kicked me out of the store. But at the same time, when I did purchase one, I would, to me, it would be a sin to do this today, but did you roll it up and stick it in your pocket like I did?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, if we would have known back
right
then, like, you know, but when you're 8 years old, you don't even think like that, do
no,
we? We
just, no.
You know, no. We just think that we love these comic books, and we're going to just roll them up, put them in our back pocket, walk home, and then go into our bedroom and read them again and read them again and just stare at those images.
Oh, yeah.
We don't think about collectability. It's the same with toys. I mean, if I wish I would have saved all my toys. I had G.I. Joes.
Right.
And, you know, like if I would have saved all this stuff and never opened them out of the box and put them in a bag and board and put them in my, you know, my safe somewhere, then yeah.
You would have had a miserable childhood.
Yeah, really.
Truth. trust me, it was a good investment playing with those things.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'd agree.
I think so, too. I think so, too. I wouldn't take any of that back.
Can I share really quickly? My brother and I, we used to do this game where we would spread out, like, one of each of the different comic series we collected. So there might be Power Man, and then next to that might be Legion of Superheroes. And next to that might be, I don't know, Batman or whatever, right? And we'd lay them out on a table, and then we would each take bean bags, and we would toss them at the table, and whichever comics we knocked off the table, those heroes got to be on your team. And then we would look at who all we had and who would win.
Nice.
So my brother became an excruciatingly grade conscious collector.
It's, you remember that from your childhood, but you know, again, like you said earlier, it's like, it's hard to replace those memories. So,
oh, I wouldn't trade it at all.
Right. Yep. So now moving in, and you made, it took you what, 13, 14 years to make this film. What got you to decide, I want to do this film? This, I mean, of course, we know you're a fan. I'm a fan too, but I haven't made a film. What made you want to do a film about the history of comics and the fans?
Well, you know, the thing I'm most proud of about this film really is that it's got a little bit of everything. It's got a lot about the history, because I felt that the history of American comics were important to give people a foundation who might be watching. Who may not, they know who Spider-Man and Superman are and Batman, but they may not know, you know, really where they came from. So it was important for me to make sure we covered a little bit of the history, but it's not just, I wanted to make sure it wasn't just a history lesson.
Right.
I wanted to make sure that, you know, the fans were represented, creators were represented, writers and artists and comic book collectors and comic book store owners. I mean, you know, I wanted to make sure there's a little bit of every part of the industry that I could cover in, and just give everybody a little bit of a taste of each some of these different fields of the comic book industry.
That's one thing I got out of it whenever watching the movie after it was done. It's like, I felt like I had gone to a comic book convention, because you have, you know, like you said, the creators, the artists, the writers. You also have the fans. You have the cosplayers that you talk about in the movie. You have the comic book owners, you know, the ones setting up the booths there, the vendors there at the comic, you know, the comic convention. And it's like an experience in 96 minutes, I think, total. But a whole experience of a Comic-Con right there. After watching the movie, I kept looking at the calendar. Okay, when's the next Comic-Con coming to my area? I got to go now, because you made me want to jump out and do that. I mean, especially, you know, it really got me motivated. There were some artists that you feature. Well, actually, you know, let's talk about some of the artists and creators that you've got. I mean, you got Stan Lee, which right there, that's enough. That's all you could have ended the movie right there, but you went on even further. You got the Romitas, I believe.
I have John Romita Jr. Yeah. The thing is that, you know, people ask me, well, why did it take, you know, you that long to make a film? And I think a lot of people don't understand. Sometimes people who make comic books, they're the same way. They, you know, it takes them years to create their first comic book.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was, I wanted to make sure I had enough depth in the film. I had plenty of writers, plenty of artists, and legitimate people, plus also up-and-coming and independent people. And lots of fans. So it took me 13 years. And, you know, when you make a film on your own, you know, you're paying for it on your own. And yeah, things don't always, you know, you don't always, it doesn't always, you know, go as fast as you would like it to.
Right.
But, you know, I was really fortunate to interview some of the, you know, greatest people, some of the legends in the comic book industry, you know, like Stan Lee and Frank Miller, Neil Adams, Mark Waid, Mark Silvestri, Todd McFarlane, John Romita Jr., Mike Richardson, who started Dark Horse, is in it. You know, I tried to get, you know, legitimate people that, you know, have been in the industry to tell the story. That's one of the things I'm really proud of the film, is that I didn't hire someone to narrate it, to tell you about the history. I made sure that people in the film told the story of the film. There's no narration in the whole film.
Wow, you know what?
It's so much better.
Yeah, I just realized that. I it flows perfectly, and it's just the artists, creators, and fans telling the story. If you wouldn't have pointed that out, I would have thought, I would have swore that it was narrated, but you're absolutely right. It was not. Holy cow, that's cool. Really cool that I didn't catch it.
Well, you know,
it still holds together.
I think, yeah, and you know, I think that people get used to being told what they need to know and what they need to see. And I think it's great, but again, for me, it was really important when I was editing the film and when I was filming it, you know, I had to make sure I was asking the questions and making sure I got the answers to tell the story in their own words.
Right.
That was very important for me, as you know, as a fan, especially. Plus, I mean, who wants to hear me or some guy who doesn't know anything about comics tell and do the narration? I saw this thing on cable, this documentary on comic books a few years ago, and it had some actor, I forget the guy's name, he was narrating it. And it was, you know, had a budget, you know, I mean, it had the studio behind it, but the guy was not a comic book fan, and he's narrating it, and I'm like, that doesn't make sense to me, you know? Don't you want to hear Neil Adams talking about,
right,
you know, some of the history, or how his part of Batman, or don't you want to hear, you know, Mark Waid? Mark Waid probably is one of the best historians of comic books out there, and I'm like, I can't get any better than that. I can't tell any better.
Yep, and that's exactly what makes this film stand out.
I wanted to praise the editing in the movie because I thought it was really intelligently done. And like Gil, I didn't actually realize while I was watching it that it didn't have a narrator, but it's edited effectively enough that you don't need one, and the story flows very organically. And the part that really jumped out at me that I loved was where you have effectively, you know, Frank Miller and Neil Adams passing the mic back and forth as they share the story of how they intersected after Neil Adams was huge and Frank Miller was nobody, you know, at that point, you know, before Frank Miller was really Frank Miller. And like, I didn't actually know that story, and it was really great to hear both sides of that from them. And it seems like such a good, you know, a good moment for both of them, you know, that they're part of. And I loved how you let them tell that story and pass it back and forth. And that was the other surprise for me too, because I've met Neil Adams a few times and he's such an affable guy and a great storyteller. I've never met Frank Miller. And honestly, interviews that I've read with him and stuff kind of give me the impression that he's kind of a jerk. And, you know, and he gets a lot of bad press too. I thought he actually reacted to you and very black and positive and nice in the interview, which I thought was great. And I wondered, was he spiky or weird at all to deal with, or was he much like he was on camera when you worked with him, or did you have to kind of approach him correctly to get that out of him?
Well, that's a really good question. I think when you're a filmmaker or when you're a creative person, you really want to make sure that you try to be as personable with these people as possible and respect them as much as you can. When I met Frank, I had never met him before. So basically what happened with Frank is, it's a funny story, is I, you know, when I was making this film, no one knew who I was. I'm just this huge fan that wants to spend, you know, 13 years and all this money and my passion on making a film that at that time, as a fan, I had never seen. It was a film that I wanted to see that wasn't out there. So I was like, well, damn it, I'm going to make this film, you know? And so I was, you know, doing searches for Frank Miller, and I found his agent, and oh, Frank's not with that agency anymore, now he's here, and it took me like 3 months, and I finally got through to his assistant, and then, you know, he's out in Manhattan, and I'm here in Los Angeles, and we had like emails going back and forth for like a month and a half trying to figure out when, and he kept asking her to ask me, well, why do you want to interview him, what's this for? And it's really hard to describe something when it's not finished yet, you know, sure. You know, I told him, I said, you know, I want to do this documentary. I'm a big fan of yours. I think that, you know, you're vital to this industry, and I really want people to hear you talk about, you know, what you've done and things like that. And so finally he agreed to do the interview. So I had to fly to Manhattan for one day. So I grabbed my camera guy. It was just me and him. It was a very small, you know, skeleton crew. And when we got there, we went to his studio, and you know, the first thing he said, and he, you know, he's kind of like what you would think at first. He kind of had this smirk on his face. It's the same smirk you see sometimes in the film. And he's kind of like, nice to meet you. Yeah, I only have like 20 minutes, so we gotta get going now. And we just got there, and we hadn't even set up the lights or the cameras. And I'm going, okay, great. It's going to be one of these kind of interviews. But, you know, hey, I'm here. I'm walking around Frank's studio in Manhattan, and it's like a museum of the stuff he's worked on. You know, there's Batman comics all over the place. There's a lot of samurai stuff because he's really into that culture. And there's just sketches everywhere. I mean, it's just like you would imagine it, you know. Finally, we sit down, and at first, you know, he's a little bit skeptical about how, you know, what kind of interviewer I will be. But once I started, you know, talking to him, he loosened up, and there was a couple of tense moments, but I mean, overall, he was a really nice guy and a great interview. Really, I found that with everybody I worked with. Everybody, you know, who was in this film was really super, super nice. You know, I mean, I think when you're a fan, you wonder, oh, that guy's so talented. Will they be cool? You know, will they talk to me?
Yeah.
You know, and they are. There has been very few that have been nothing but nice to me. And, you know, again, you know, here I am, you know, flying to Frank's studio, and I don't have a finished film yet. And I'm interviewing him, and he's, like, talking to me about everything, you know? So, you know, again, and then, you know, what you were talking about, it's one of my favorite parts of the film, too, is the Stan or the Frank and Neil exchange. That was totally unscripted and unpredicted. I had no idea that story was going to come out. So what happened was, is when I was interviewing Frank, you know, I asked him, you know, who has inspired you? Who helped you with getting your star? How hard is it? And he mentioned Neil. And I was like, oh, wow, Neil's pretty amazing artist, you know, and illustrator. And then he started telling me that story. And I was like, you guys, I was just like, my jaw was like wide open going, oh my God, Neil was telling you stunk and you should give it up, move back to Vermont. I mean, we're talking Frank Miller here, you know, hello. You know, and so I knew that when I interviewed Neil that I had to ask him about it. So, and it's going. And this goes back to your earlier comment about the editing. My good friend Brian Ging edited the film for me, and he, him and my DP Douglas Miller, they both really brought a lot to the film. They both contributed quite a bit as far as, you know, helping me kind of bring those subtle nuances to life. That, you know, like you, I hope when people watch that part of the film, they feel like these guys are almost in the same room, even though they're not. You know, you get that feeling because they're playing off each other.
Yeah, that's one of the things that really worked well with that aspect. Like, Tim, I was trying to remember the section. It's like, it did. It seemed like they were, like, at least, if not in the same room, at least, you know, they knew what the other person said. Or they, you know, well, understand that you are going to be coming up at a big con here coming up soon. And, in fact, we've got Mike Carbonaro going to join us here. But you're going to be at the Big Apple Con, and that is going to be March 11th and 12th at the Hotel Pennsylvania in New York. And tell us what's going to be happening there at the con, and then we're going to bring Mike, and you can bring Mike in to talk about the Big Apple Con itself.
Well, you know, it's the great thing is that for me, it's great when people, you know, watch this film. But what I'm really proud of is that this film is really a film to watch with other fans. It really is. It's a great movie, you know, in a theater, to be in a theater full of, you know, a lot of comic book fans just like yourself. And it's like a mini con when you go to watch this film. That's the feeling when you go to theater. And it's always been my dream to kind of really have it in theater, you know what I mean? And or at conventions, so people can watch it together. They can share it together. They can talk about it. They can laugh together. Mm-hmm. You know, they can cheer if they want to. I've had people cheer when they see certain people on the screen or a certain character or a certain cover that they just love, you know,
right.
They show their emotions, and that's always been important to me. So I've screened the film at some conventions, and it's been a great experience for me. And I don't know, maybe 5 months ago, Mike's partner, Zorik, he approached me and he loved the film and he wanted me to be a part of the Big Apple Con. And I'm really just so proud to be a part of this show. I mean, Mike has put on the show for a long time in New York. It's the longest running Comic-Con in New York. And, you know, just to be a part of it, there's so many great people are going to be there. Stan Lee's going to be there. Jim Steranko. There's just so many great comic book people. And in this convention, it's great because it's, you know, it's aimed at comic books. It's, you know, there's going to be some actors there and stuff from movies, but it's very comic book focused, and that's really a great thing. And so, yeah, I'm really proud we're going to be there screening the film on Sunday, March 12th, and, you know, it's going to be a party.
Welcome to the podcast, Mike Carbonaro. Mike, you still with us here?
I am still there, but I want to know something. Who rolls up their comic book?
Oh, I have long since stopped.
Against the rules. You can't roll up your comic books. No! Never!
I have long since stopped, but I'm all right.
Oh, boy.
Well, Mike... Okay.
That's what makes the other ones more valuable.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That run of 300 is now 299. But anyway, well, Mike, tell us about Big AppleCon. What's going on? March 11th and 12th at the Hotel Pennsylvania, New York. Tell us more about it.
Sure. Hi, guys. How's everybody? Hello, fans out there. It's a snowstorm here on the East Coast. I had to drive up to New York, and I did it in the middle of the night to escape the snow, and I'm stuck here in Rhode Island, but it's fine. So all for the sake of comic books and comic conventions.
There you go.
The show is going to be great. It's a two-day event, Saturday and Sunday. Sunday afternoon, there is nothing else you want to do in New York City but come to the Big Apple Convention. The website is nycbm.com, and you will get one of the best comic book movies that you'll ever see. And we're working on bringing a couple of special guests who are also appear in your film, Michael Valentine, to maybe introduce the film and say hello. I'm also working with a good friend of mine, Mile High Comics, to produce a shopping spree event that we'll be giving to some lucky audience member during the screening. We're working hard to make it fun. But yeah, just like you had fun loving comic books, I've always loved comic book conventions, buying and selling comic books. And for me, you know, I've made lots of friends. I've found a lot of my life and coming out of my shell, so to speak, at a comic book convention. And so I just want to create an entertaining place for people to enjoy themselves with superheroes, with artists, creators. And I always have kept Big Apple as close to the vest to comic books as I could. We do insert lots of celebrities, lots of actors, wrestlers, all kinds of people, but that is part of the pop culture.
Oh, yeah.
I still like to keep the main theme comic books. And thank you for letting us, you know, have your film as a showing. It'll be fabulous.
Oh, Mike, I'm honored to be a part of it, man. You know, and it's, Mike, you're a fantastic person and human being, and this is what I was saying earlier about.
I hope they say that on my gravestone. We'll see. It still remains to be seen. You know, before we got on here, we were starting to talk about sidekicks, right?
Right, right.
So yes. I think that's very interesting. I remember when I met Joe Simon of Simon and Kirby fame, and, you know, we were asking about Captain America, and we said, well, what about Bucky? How did he come about? He goes, everybody had a sidekick, so we just added Bucky. I mean, literally.
Amazing.
It's kind of cool. So
it's almost like
Big Apple Conventions is my sidekick, and all the people that work with me. You know, I mean, it's amazing. Running a comic book convention is the most incredible thing because you literally have an empty space.
Right.
And the next thing, for 2 or 3 days, that space is filled with thousands and thousands of people. And then that Sunday evening or Monday, it's empty again. Yeah. So it's a work of art. Not everybody thinks it is, but it really is a work of art putting it together. I've gone through changes over the last few months trying to make this one bigger and better than ever, as the saying goes, and it's starting to get there.
Well, well, first of all, how long have you been doing the Big Apple Big Apple Comic Convention?
Out of the womb. Right out of the womb, I scream, give me an apple, make your big apple. Really, it's all started. I've always run conventions. I always liked the idea of doing things. I did a rock and roll convention in the 1970s with Streets, Bowie Boulevard, Floyd Freeway, Penny. I loved amusement parks.
Uh-huh.
And in the 1980s, I ran a comic book convention with 40 tables, but they were all my own stuff. It was the American Legion Hall. Then in 96, myself with two other partners, including my friend Vincent Cerzola from Metropolis, there was a convention. The last minute, the promoter lost his ability to run the show. There was a church basement. We threw the money at the guys for the church basement, spent 3 days promoting it, and we saved the day. We became the superheroes. We rented the church basement. It was a whoosh when we opened the doors. People came in, and Big Apple Conventions was born.
Nice.
I'm taking it from the church basement to the top of the 18th floor in the Hotel Pennsylvania. And we're even going to go higher in the next couple of years.
Nice. One thing, you got the screening of Michael's movie. It's going to be hard to say Michael and Mike, but I mean, that's easy to say, but it's, as long as people understand what I'm saying. All right, so you got the screening of Michael's movie coming in here. So what do you think of his movie? What was your favorite aspect of his movie?
It was all great. And yeah, I agree with you about the narration part, that there wasn't any. That was really hard to get that right, especially when you edit it and make it work. The fact that the artists spoke for themselves,
yes,
and it just really flowed wonderfully, and there are moments when you want to, and you want to scream at everybody. It was just a really great, a combination, a fan movie, and I learned a lot, you know, about the creative process of comic books and collectibles and all that stuff. So, it, you know, I learned things. I mean, Neil Adams, I'm proud to say, is a friend of mine in New York City, and I learned things listening to him that I didn't even know. So,
yep. That's exactly right. That's one of the things I like about this is that you will learn something. I mean, I never by any means said I was an expert at comic books and everything. I just know I love them. And learning some of the things, some of the aspects, some of the creators, what got them started. Like we talked about, Frank Miller getting told that he sucked. Just move home. Don't do this.
Right.
I mean, that right there alone is like, you know what? He could have gone home, but what would we have had?
I've had Frank Miller and Neil Adams at my show twice before. And I literally put them on stage together, and they just started talking. And the next thing you know, for like an hour and a half later, they're still arguing and discussing. And Frank would always call Neil, you know, his uncle in comic books, you know, the man that, you know, that made him, you know, and he reveres him in so many ways. And it's wonderful to see that. So
that's
you can
awesome.
See that in the film as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well,
I wanted to just, you know, say thank you for that, Mike, because that really was kind of my goal. I'm the same way. I never said I was the biggest know-all of comic books. That's not why I did this. I actually wanted this to be a learning, like a journey that I took. I took the same journey. I mean, all the stuff that you're seeing in the film that you may, you know, the audience people may or may not know, I was learning too. And that's why I love doing this, because I love just hearing these great stories and learning more and more about this industry and these great people who have made it what it is today.
You know, and sometimes I really don't know why I run a convention sometimes, but if somebody comes up to me and says they have a good time and they had a great show, and I hope a lot more people will do it this in a month from now, that's what makes it worthwhile. You know, I like to create a space where people can enjoy themselves and have a good time in the comic book world.
Definitely so.
And, you know, there's an energy, too, that are at these conventions. And anybody out there listening who hasn't been to a convention, you've got to go. You got to go.
NYCBM.com.
Yeah, if you're in New York, you got to go to this Big Apple. Mike, who are some of the people who are going to be there this year?
Well, we've got Stan Lee, of course, Jim Steranko, a couple of the guys from the Daredevil TV show.
Nice.
Okay.
Awesome.
Eldon Henson, Peter Shinkoda. We've got a couple of different guys. We've got Jason David Frank, Power Ranger, Barbara Eden from I Dream of Jeannie. I'm still working on some last-minute artists.
Wait, did you say Barbara Eden?
Yeah, Barbara Eden.
Wow.
Bergdahl, the Punisher actor, and among many other roles that he's had, will be there on Sunday. Your day, Sunday. He's coming on Sunday. Uh-huh. Maybe we'll get him to introduce the film. That'd be great.
That would be awesome.
Spencer Wilding, who played Darth Vader in the new Star Wars movie, is going to be there. Lots of other guys and a whole bunch of artists. And I'm still working last minute to get more and more people to the show, especially comic artists. I've got a few in the pipeline that I'm hoping to be able to announce.
Oh, beautiful. So what's that website for people to get tickets and everything?
NYCBM.com. I'm actually on my way right now to buy a comic book deal here in Rhode Island. So
nice.
No more rolling up your comic books. That has to end right now.
I stopped that about 20 years ago. I'll be putting a link to to your con. I'll be putting that on our Nerd Up podcast page. I'll also be sharing it on our Facebook page. So anybody listening to the podcast, if you need more information, check those out. I'll definitely have that up on nerduppodcast.com. So, March 11th and 12th, Hotel Pennsylvania in New York. And if only I could find a way to go, stuck here in the Midwest, I don't know. There's got to be a train or something that can pull me there.
Well, I'll have Barbara Eden give you a call and she'll tell you how to wink twice.
I dream of Jeannie, man.
I know. That right there grabbed my attention immediately. So, yeah, well, if you got her to give me a call, I would be there in a heartbeat. So, there you go.
All right, we'll work on that one. At least I can get you an autograph.
So, yeah.
Hey, guys, thanks a lot for having me. I'm literally out. Mike, thanks for making the movie. It's going to be exciting. And we're kind of kicking off a Big Apple Film Festival with your movie. So,
nice.
You and I talked a little bit about number two with this film, and we hope that that'll happen somewhere down the line, right?
Yes, I'm already starting to get pre-production going on that.
Good.
All right.
Good. Well, I want to help you with that, too, if we can't do anything. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Love your podcast.
Thank you very much. Have a great show.
Thanks, Mike.
I think you got the right show to have your film to be shown at. Sounds like he is definitely the hype man. And it sounds like he enjoyed the film. So if he enjoyed it, he can hype it. Oh, you got no problems. So
that's right.
Yeah, you know, it's great when you have people who believe in what you do, because you know, it's like anything. When you know you guys have this great podcast, you know, you don't know, you do it because you believe in it, right? And you want to do it, but you don't know how people are going to, you know, if they're going to accept it or not. And you know, when I was making this film, I didn't know how people are going to react to it. I knew that some people would like it and some people wouldn't. I did it because I just love this industry, and again, it was always something that as a fan I wanted to see. So I just hope that people really get something out of it. I mean, I feel, you know, people have gotten inspired by it. They've said that, you know, they wanted to. I had kids watch this film. I did a screening in San Antonio, and I had, like, some really little kids that came. And, you know, with documentaries and kids, there's two things don't really go together because, you know, it's usually just a bunch of people talking and the kids get bored. These kids, they were quiet. They watched the whole thing. And at the end of the movie, they came up to me, and there was one little girl. She's probably 8 or 9 years old. She goes, "I want to write comics." And
wow.
I'm like, oh, my God.
How cool is that?
Right. How cool is that? I mean, that's priceless. That's something that I would have never, you know, even conceived of when I started making this film, that maybe I inspired, this film inspired someone.
Yeah. You know, that's a great feeling. I can imagine that when that happened, you know, anybody's inspired comic book wise of any sort, you know, if I can get one person to read a comic book, I'm happy, you know, and here you are making the film and lots of people. I mean, I saw that you, when you first came out with the film. Now, how long has the movie been out now?
It was released in February on, like, iTunes and, you know, all the digital platforms.
Uh-huh.
And it's on Amazon Prime. But the DVD is, like, something that people buy and they want to hold in their hand, right?
Right.
You know, people read comics online, but we still have comic book stores, and comic book stores are doing better than probably ever.
Right.
And, you know, so for me, with the DVD, I wanted to make it. So in July, the DVD came out, and the DVD has the whole film, plus it has 4 hours, count them, 4 hours of bonus. So if you wanted to see Frank Miller, you get to see the whole Frank Miller interview I did.
Oh, wow.
If you want to see the whole Stan Lee interview, I edited some of the, you know, the fluff out of it, but the whole interview is there in its entirety. And then there's 2 hours of extra stuff, a lot more stuff of Mark Waid and Neil Adams and Mark Silvestri, and a lot more from the fans, and it's just, and then I made a comic book, because funny enough, one of the things, the way I started this film is that, you know, I think you had asked this question early on, and I kind of didn't really answer it probably the best I could, but I wanted to make a comic book. I decided that I wanted to create my own comic book, and this is like 14 years ago, and I could never get off the ground. So someone said, "Why don't you make a comic book? Movies are made, you know, do the research of how to do that." And I realized it's not that easy, you know.
Right.
So when I started the film, originally my idea is I wanted to create a comic book. That's kind of how the film was born. And I realized that it wasn't so easy to make a comic book. And I started trying to find the right artist. And, you know, you have to find the right artist. It's a truly collaborative effort, just like filmmaking. It's
right.
Parallel filmmaking quite a bit, actually. And so I started going to some of the local conventions here in L.A. I didn't go on to Comic-Con yet, but I went to a couple local conventions here, and then the first person I met was a guy named Tone Rodriguez. And Tone is actually in the film. He's one of my first interviews for the film. And when I went to this convention, I just was exposed to this world that I hadn't seen before. And this is, again, back in 2004. And it was, fans could meet their heroes, you know, could meet these legends and could talk to them and could get advice from them. And I just, this light bulb went out in my head, and I'm like, this is what I want to do. I want to document this phenomenon because, you know, it was something that I always wanted to see, like I said earlier. So fast forward to last year in July, when I was putting the DVD out, my distributor said, "Well, what do you want to do with the DVD? And I said, "Well, I want to I wanted to do all this great stuff with it. I wanted to make it a comic book and have the DVD as a slide in the one of the pages. And they go, that's a great idea, but it's going to cost you this much. And then I'm like, well, okay, maybe not. So, but what I decided to do is I decided to give every, because I shot over 350 hours worth of footage, I decided to give everybody a lot of extras that didn't make the film, and I made a comic book. And I created it with two guys, this guy named Julian Aquino, who helped me write it, and Paul Mgenko, who's an amazing artist, who actually did my movie poster and did the artwork for the comic book. And we had, get this, we had 2 weeks to make it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was intense. It was intense. Now, it's only an 8-page comic. It's a mini comic. But still, coming up with a story.
Right.
Kind of fleshing out what each panel is going to look like, what the movement's going to be, how it's going to move. And then, you know, fleshing out the artwork, putting the word balloons, figuring out what the dialogue's going to be, all that, coloring it, penciling it, inking it, you know, everything. It's just, it's a pretty unique experience for sure, but it was great. So anyway, the DVD itself is a great buy because you get all that extra stuff and you can't get that anywhere else.
Yeah, I might have to buy the DVD now. I didn't realize all that extra came in.
I know, right?
I was just happy to watch it on Amazon. I think, Amazon Prime's where I watched it, and I was like, I was happy to do that. But now, wow, I would like to see more of that Neil Adams and Frank Miller and, you know, how that thing. So, all right, so it is available on Amazon, both the DVD and the digital version. You said it's available on iTunes as well. Where else can it be found?
Oh, my gosh, it's all over on Target.com. If anybody just want to, like, they can do a search on Google, but they can also go to my website, and I have links to all those different avenues, wherever you want to purchase it.
Well,
there's links there. There's a page.
All right, go ahead and pimp out your website.
The website is comicsthemovie.com. That's comicsthemovie.com.
So head out there and you can find out where to get. I mean, I'm telling you guys, I had a blast watching this because every time somebody new would come on, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's such and such. Oh my gosh, that's, and then you get into the Comic-Con part of it. Now let me tell you, this is one thing I really loved about the film was the fact that you got the fans, because the fans are really what makes this industry roll. And I mean, sure, you got the artists and the creators, and they're up, you know, okay, let's say they're up in their towers making these beautiful works of art, but it's the fans that are out there keeping it going. And these comic conventions, when you go to a convention and meet these fans, you'll see why it is such a popular medium. I mean, I went to my first Comic-Con was back in the 80s. It was San Diego, back when it was just a little bitty thing. I was in the Navy, and we just happened to stop in, and this little known artist by the name of Matt Groening was like 87, 88, around in there. He was there signing pictures, and I'm like, oh, hey, this guy did the Life in Hell stuff. Well, and I got to buy some comic books. So then next thing I know, The Simpsons come out, and like, oh, hey, I met that guy at a con. And then I never went to another con until like around a little bitty ones here and there, but nothing big, just basically where they'd sell. But Indie PopCon happened about 2015, maybe 2014, that's it, where they combine all pop culture, including comic books. And it's like all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is what it's about. And again, San Diego Comic-Con, when it was little, yeah, it was about comics. It was about that. Now it's huge. But the Indie PopCon, it brought me back to the world of cons and the fans and finding out what all this world is about. And I'll tell you what, I might have to get you in touch with the people at Indie PopCon so that maybe we can get a screening of your movie there too. I think that would be fun.
That would be fantastic, man. I would love that. I mean, again, I love the film and being there. It's that kind of film that I really feel needs to be seen with other fans. And, you know, I call it the Rocky Horror of comic books. You know, it's kind of like people can see it as many times as they want. They can always just be together. And, you know, going back to what you're talking about, the conventions, I had a great time going to conventions. I tried to go to as many as I could. I went to, you know, Comic-Con for pretty much every year since 2004. In fact, 2004 is when I first met Stan Lee, and back then you could actually go up to Stan Lee and say hello.
Right.
Really, it's changed that much. And it's actually, there's a little small little clip in the film that I'm really glad my camera guy caught, because that was my first meeting with him. And he was getting ready to do a panel at San Diego. He's standing on the side of the stage, And he's just hanging out there. There's no one there. There's a guy on stage kind of talking, and Stan's waiting to go on. And my camera guy's with me, and when we filmed at conventions, we just, it's kind of like we go on impulse. We have a kind of a plan, but, you know, it's like whatever happens, happens. And I said, Doug, I said, come on with me. There's Stan over there. I'm going to go say hello to him. I don't care if he gets mad, he gets mad. But I he's one of my idols, so I'm going to go up. I have my opportunity just to say hello. I may never get to meet him or interview him because at this time I had not interviewed him. So I went up there to him, and I said, Stan, it's so nice to meet you. It's a pleasure. You know, I admired your work. You're the reason why I'm, you know, into comic books and just, you know, the reason why I'm here doing what I'm doing. And he's like, thank you very much. And that little clip is in the film, and I'm so proud of it.
Wow.
But what I was going to say about the conventions is that there's so much energy there.
Yes.
And I went to Comic-Con. I went to Wizard Worlds. I've gone to WonderCons. I've gone to anime expos. And I've also gone to some of the smaller conventions, which I love the smaller conventions because it's a little bit more intimate. With Comic-Con, there's so much to do that you
right.
probably won't get to do everything. But,
right.
But what I'm really, you know, one of my favorite parts of making this film, besides interviewing, you know, like you were saying, some of the greatest talent in the industry, was meeting the fans, because just to see their passion and see how even people that just dressing as Wonder Woman because they think they look sexy, they're dressing as Wonder Woman or Iron Man and Superman because it means to them. You know what I mean?
It's
deeper than just here's a costume. You know? And just to see the excitement in their eyes, and you can see it when you're watching the film. They're thrilled to be there. There's this energy that's kind of contagious. And you know you're kind of part of something really special.
Yeah, definitely so. I mean, and that's one thing about just the cosplayers alone. I mean, the time, the dedication they put into these things right there shows what kind of a fan is at these. Because these guys spend a whole year getting ready for one con, you know, sometimes. And it's we all fans. I mean, I know I look forward now that I'm on a regular on the con circuit, if you will. I look forward to each one. I'm like, okay, what am I going to pick up here? Okay, I'm looking for this book, or this artist is going to be there. I'll have him sign this book. Or, oh, they're going to have this, you know, Stan Lee's going to be there. I'm going to get to stand up next to Stan Lee. You know, and the cons, I mean, and everybody's the same. Everybody's that same fanboy. And so you can all kind of just, like, gush with each other. Kind of like the experience of watching your movie together.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, even the creators and the artists, they're fans, too. So it's
true.
You know, you're kind of surrounded by a bunch of people that have the same passion that you do. And you can walk up to anybody and just start talking to them. You know, again, it was some of my favorite times were going to the conventions. I'm actually going to be screening my film in Long Beach in LA here in 2 weeks. And I love it because it's like, you know, you get to go to a place where people get you.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's one thing, like I said earlier, and that's to kind of bring this back to a close for the end of the podcast, but that's what it is. Watching this movie, you get a full Comic-Con experience. I don't know if you even had that in mind, but you got the creators, you got the artists, you have the fans, you have the cosplayers. You have everything there is that you can experience in a con in your film forever. And I thought that was a really unique approach to that. Or whether you intended to or not, you got that feeling as you when the movie was over. It's like, oh yeah, it's like I just went through a con. Now I got to go to another one. So I really appreciated that aspect of it.
And I just want to compliment you on the great job you did interviewing those guys and kind of in a way getting out of their way and just letting them tell their story. And it must on some level, like I don't know, maybe you're really good at this, but for me it would be really hard to not get starstruck at times and just be like, wow, you're Stan Lee, you're awesome. You know, like Chris Farley, right? Interviewing Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
That was awesome. You know, so kudos to you on that. I just think that's a real feat. And I love the feeling. There's a lot of love in the whole movie. And you're right. You know, it does give you that feeling you get when you go to a convention because there's so much presence of the fans and dealers and everybody in the movie. And, you know, it's a powerful thing when you go to your first convention and you find yourself in the middle of something and you realize, wow, I'm in the middle of something. This is, you know, and I mean literally, like in your life, you're not alone. This is something that maybe you've been enjoying on your own. huge and, you know, the biggest game in town, so many people are coming who maybe would never have done it in the past, but they're, you know, the societal punishment for admitting you like this stuff is no longer really there. So I love how tent's getting bigger and more kinds of people are feeling comfortable coming out to the shows and seeing what a great scene it is. I love it personally. I mean, sometimes I miss how cozy things were in the old days, but it's really wonderful to see like so many different ideas. I like that movie really carries that moment.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate that. And it's really important that you kind of got that from it, because that is what I was going for
nice.
Sure. You know, again, it's always a, it's always, you know, there was so much that I wanted to do, and I credit everybody I worked with, because, you know, a good editor is really great for someone like me who, you know, I told him, I said, here's all the clips I want in the film, and it's going to be about 85, 90 minutes. And he goes, this is about 3 hours worth of movie here.
Wow.
Oh, man, can't you make 3 hours into an hour and a half? You know, come on. Do your magic. You're an editor. And he really did. You know, we talked a lot about how the movie wanted to flow and, you know, how we wanted things to move and who we wanted to do this and that as far as the story. And we have great permissions which help kind of move from one subject to another. You know, I was really blessed to have a really talented composer do the music, because I felt that music was really a part of, you know, to give this, you know, this superhero feel that it really needed. I've seen some documentaries and then they come to the music and the music's either there is none or the music is kind of lame.
Right.
And I said,
generic,
no,
yeah.
We have to, this has to, it can't be generic. It has to be original music that we, you know, and we could talk a whole show about scoring music for a documentary, but, you know, to kind of make those sequences more exciting, you know, and Frank Miller starts talking about Batman, The Dark Knight, the music there is just still, when I listen to it, gives me chills, you know, and I hope that all that comes through.
I it did.
Yeah.
And
I
there were so many aspects of this film that I enjoyed that a lot of it I didn't realize till after it was over, though. I'm like, oh, wow. But I do want to point out one thing, and this is mainly for you, Tim Coker, is that while watching this film, one of the big things I got is that, hey, you know, Tim Coker looks just like Mark Wade.
Oh, thanks a lot.
But,
hey, he's a genius. I'll take that as a compliment.
It was amazing. I was like, hey, wait, Tim. Oh, no, that's Mark. Okay. Well, once again, Michael Valentine, thanks for joining us. Comics Beyond the Comic Book Pages. Once again, what's your website, and so people can check out more information about the movie.
Really quickly, I just wanted to say, again, thank you guys so much, and thank you everyone out there for supporting me and supporting this film and independent film, independent art, independent comic books. If anybody or anybody's out there listening who want to have a screening, they can, you know, get in touch with me through the website. I'd love to get a screening with you guys. We can do something really cool. I'm working with a company called Tug, and Tug, like, almost zero cost for someone to host their own screening of the film. All they have to do is they sell so many tickets to make the event happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if they sell so many tickets, then comics comes to your town and you can host your own screening.
Cool.
So I wanted to kind of just let people know about that. And so if anybody's in the LA area, and next weekend we're going to be in Long Beach screening the film, and if you're in New York again, we're going to be at Big Apple Con on March 12th, and the website is comicsthemovie.com, comicsthemovie.com, and again, thank you guys so much for having me.
All right. Okay, so once again, thanks Michael Valentine for joining us on the podcast. Tim, what do you got to talk about?
You know, there's a movie I saw several years ago, and I've always remembered it. It's another documentary called In Search of Steve Ditko. Have you ever seen it?
No, I have not.
All right, it's made by a guy, there's an English guy named Jonathan Ross, who very funny, like talk show host kind of guy.
I know, I know Jonathan Ross.
Oh, you know him? Okay,
yeah.
Right. It's his show, and he's a huge Spider-Man fan, and especially a huge Steve Ditko Spider-Man fan. And it's a documentary kind of about Ditko's career, about Jonathan Ross's fascination with Ditko's career. And then also it involves him trying to get a hold of Steve Ditko, who is famously reclusive. You know, Steve Ditko does not like talking to fans.
Right.
He does not like talking about making Spider-Man. He's not interested in that era of his career in the least. And he's just kind of famously an unpleasant person to deal with. You know, like I don't think that he's a jerk necessarily, but he just does not care about the things we care about, you know?
Right.
And Jonathan Ross really, really wants to meet him. And halfway, I think that this whole documentary existed so that Jonathan Ross would have an excuse to be able to meet Steve Ditko and interview him. And he keeps trying throughout the documentary to get a hold of him, and he keeps failing. And then finally, there's this scene where he and Neil Gaiman are outside of, because Neil Gaiman's a big fan too, obviously. And they're outside on the streets of New York, and Jonathan Ross says, "All right, this building houses Steve Ditko's office. And I think we're going to go up and try to get a hold of him." And the look on Neil Gaiman's face, because if even Neil Gaiman is intimidated by Steve Ditko, you know that's an intimidating scene.
Right, right.
Neil Gaiman's face, he really is like, you know, it's almost like saying, "You're going to go punch Dr. Doom in the head." You know, like, it's the funniest thing. And, you know, I'll go ahead and say they don't actually get to interview him on camera, but it's a really great moment in the movie, and it's a great way to learn more about Steve Ditko too, if you're interested, because he is a fascinating guy. So, but hearing him talk about approaching Frank Miller and whatnot made me think about, you know, the toughest interview subject in comics probably, which is Steve Ditko, and that right. one anecdote. So,
oh wow,
if you folks are out there and you can track it down, it's called "In Search of Steve Ditko," and I totally recommend it.
Cool. Yeah, I've seen Jonathan Ross makes kind of like regular, I got the same problem pronouncing R like he does. He makes regular appearances at San Diego Comic-Con. So, yeah. Wow. All right. I'm going to definitely look for that. That sounds like intriguing. I always like a good documentary when it's something fun like that. I guess boring documentaries I wouldn't watch. Or would anybody? Well, I guess somebody does. Let's see here. I guess Eric is still recovering from his accident. Tim, Isaac got strep throat, which is not a good thing because he's in the musical, The Music Man. And strep throat's not a good thing when you're singing, you know. So
wait, what part is he playing?
He's going to be one of the traveling salesmen. He's, you know, multiple parts, basically. Yeah. So one of them's a traveling salesman in the first scene, and he's got this one solo line that is just, I wish I could remember the words, but it's just something, it goes with the rhythm of the train. I don't know if you remember seeing the movie, how they're talking. Yeah. And it's really funny.
You gotta know the territory.
Yeah, that part. And it's like, oh my gosh. So he wanted the part where he's saying Shapoopy, but he didn't get that. who was that, Peter? Who got that part in the movie? I wish I could remember now, but yeah, somebody... He's like a famous comedian. Anyway, I was made fun of him in Family Guy. Peter Griffin sang it in Family Guy, and that's the reason Isaac wanted to get that part. But he just wanted to sing Shapoopy. But anyway, strep throat's keeping him from us, and I told him, hey, just drink tea and lay down and go away. And Tim Mattson, I don't know what he was doing. He's just busy. So it's just you and me, man. But I think we made a go at it. Yeah, we did it. We pulled it off. We talked to Michael Valentine and Mike Carbonaro. All right.
That was outstanding.
Yeah. Let's see here. I guess all the rest we have to say is, hey, if you want to support us, all you got to do is go to nerduppodcast.com, buy those T-shirts. Let me tell you, you look cool. And it'd be really cool if you got a T-shirt, wore it to a convention somewhere, and people would say, hey, you listen to Nerd Up also. And, you know, you become immediate friends just like that. It's a great way to make friends. But also you can catch me. I'm Guilty Wilson. You can catch me on Twitter at Gil Wilson.
And I'm Tim Coker. And you know, I'm really not on Twitter, but if you want, I have a really great Instagram about my dogs. It's at Oak Bark.
Yeah.
So it's like Oak Bark with a B. So it's Oak Bark. And my dogs are adorable and really funny. And I post about 3 times a day.
I've watched it several times, or not watched it, but looked at it several times after you first initially started promoting that. And I'm like, I don't know. Do these dogs really know that they're posing for these pictures? How does this? I gotta ask you. How does this work? Do you pose them, or do they just? Is this natural for these guys?
No, it's natural. I couldn't pose them if I tried. Lenny actually, Lenny's the older one. So
right.
Lenny's like a three-legged Shar Pei who's 11 years old, and he does not like the camera. And really tries to turn away from it whenever possible.
Oh.
And then the puppy Hazel, you just have to be quick because she's always on the move.
Now, so. Hazel is a new acquisition for you, isn't she?
Yeah, we got her in November.
Yeah.
She was our after the election consolation distraction. And I'll tell you, she has done a great job. I've been so busy with her, I don't even know what's going on in the world.
Nice.
But she's great. She's half Shar Pei, half English Bulldog, and all trouble.
So, Instagram, Oak Bark. Yeah, that's great. Bark. But yeah, you had me. I've never been on Instagram before until you started talking about it. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of fun. So, all right, Tim, thanks for helping me complete this task tonight. And, hey, maybe we can do this right with just two of us here. But like we say at the end of every single episode, stay nerdy. Nerd up.
Check out the number one sports podcast in Washington, Indiana. It's The Crossover. It is Tuesday night. Here we go, Brian.
I'm not going to give the NFL MVP to Matt Ryan. I'm just not going to do it.
Just give the guy, you know, a smack on the wrist. Say, hey, man, just focus on this for six more days. Dude, don't wear the jersey.
Oh my goodness.
You need to figure out if you're going to be an NFL quarterback or if you're going to go teach JV football somewhere.
We're a local show with a national perspective.
So in Miami, the thieves were spotted wearing a Bethel Pilots
Bro.
Home jersey.
Rejoice! Rejoice, all Red Sox fans!
You know, don't count them out yet, okay?
So, and I don't think that's a valid argument.
You can find our show at TrueDirtBag.com or to subscribe to our podcast, email us at BretHart77@gmail.com.